This is Johnny, the chubby Caucasian Christian closeted conservative. Some might say I'm everything wrong with the world, but don't take their word for it. Make up your own mind. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chubby Caucasian Christian Closeted Conservative. I'm sorry I've been MIA for a little while. I've had some personal things going on, kids getting sick. And I want to ease back on into this by talking about an NPR Up First episode.
I'm Stefan Stinky,
and this is Up First from NPR News.
Now, I know what you're thinking. John, why are you listening to NPR? A few years ago, I made a promise to a friend. We got into a political discussion. He was a fellow member of my church. We did not agree on a whole lot, and I had a lot of difficulty comprehending how an individual who believed that Jesus was born, died, and rose again for our sins, a person who reads their Bible, studies their Bible, we could have such dramatic differing political opinions, especially when it comes to woke culture. So my friend suggested, and we are still friends, my friend suggested to help me turn from my wicked ways that I listen to an NPR podcast called Up First. And apparently it is the news that I need to start my day. It comes on every day. It's about 15 minutes long. On the weekends, they usually showcase another NPR podcast. They play it in the spot of Up First, and those are usually significantly longer, anywhere from a half an hour to an hour. This podcast has taught me a lot. It's always interesting, the stories that they decide to cover and then the stories that they do not decide to cover. Now, if you ever bring that up with Larry, Liberal, Linda, what they are going to say is, John, the podcast is only 15 minutes. There's no way that they have enough time to cover every single story every day. And that is fine. We can have that argument. I still find it interesting what they decide to spend that 15 minutes on. And the last 3 or 4 years that I have been listening to this podcast, I would say about 60% of it is they spend on Donald Trump. But that is another story for another day. According to a 2020 Newsweek article, NPR receives 1% of its funding from the national government, and that is down from 2017 when it was 4%. So you're not going to get a lib to agree to with you that NPR receives government funding, but the question that I would love to ask them is, what would your opinion be if Fox News received 1% of funding from government sources? And they would say, oh, well, John, that's completely different. Yada, yada, yada. If you look at NPR's website, about 60% of it comes from corporate sponsors, DNC. And it is very apparent in the show. It is so sad. Anyhow, there has been an NPR episode that I've been hanging on to for a long time that follows this woman, Latasha Barnes, as she rediscovers the dance of Lindy Hop. I thought this would be a great way to ease back into the show because this episode aired about a year ago, but certain individuals online, I guess, have finally discovered this, and I recently saw a lot of Facebook posts about this specific woman. And it's so sad that they could use this story, her story. It's a beautiful story. It's a story of hope, overcoming adversity, and could be a story about unity as well. But they use it to divide people based on the color of their skin. And it is so sad. Just to tell you a little bit about Miss Barnes, she always wanted to dance. And this, I'm using direct language from the podcast. So I'm not inferring or making up anything here. The podcast, I will post it on all of my social media. Please go listen to the whole thing. It's about 45 minutes. And it should and will infuriate you. Anyhow, from a very young age, she always wanted to dance. She tells this story about dancing with her grandmother. I can relate to this slightly, and we will talk about it later, but my wife is a dancer and has always wanted to dance. Anyhow, Mrs. Barnes' family did not believe she could succeed with dancing, that it was always associated with struggling, so they encouraged her not to get involved in it. So she joined the military. Miss Barnes, thank you so much for your service. Because of people like you, I can talk into this microphone and have my own freedom of speech, just like NPR podcasts can as well. Thank you for everything. Thank you for your service to this country. She worked her way up and was a telecommunication and communication security specialist in the Obama White House. Now we see why this story is covered. It really doesn't have anything to do with Lindy Hop or the African-American culture. It has everything to do with Obama and this individual who was in their White House. She has clout. She probably told someone this story somewhere, somebody important, and they said, oh my goodness, you worked in the Obama White House? This is an amazing story. We have to cover it, and we should make it all about race. During this time, she was the telecommunication and communication security specialist. She was also still dancing, and she was doing very well. She was winning competitions. In fact, she did so well that in 2011, she was able to leave her job at the White House and fully focus on dancing. This is one of my favorite parts of the episode. She accomplishes the American dream. This could have been another spotlight in the episode. This woman worked her tail off, got all the way up to the White House, the very, very, very best at her job, made up and saved enough money so that she could walk away from a White House job and chase her dream. This story should be told to every single little kid. Don't ever stop dreaming. Work as hard as you can, and one day you'll be able to drop everything and chase your dreams. Maybe one day you can be as privileged as Miss Barnes. But no, that is hardly a blip in the story. At age 26, she won a scholarship to Sweden to go learn Lindy Hop. Prior to this, she had only done house and hip-hop dancing and had been very successful. This is her description of her reaction after receiving the scholarship.
It was a simultaneous moment of like, this is so cool. Wait, I'm going where? For a dance that was founded in Harlem? I don't understand. How did it get over there?
I will tell you how it got over there. A lot of this information also comes from the podcast as well. There was an individual named Frankie Manning who was like the legendary Lindy Hopper. Anyhow, 1943, Frankie was drafted to fight in, you are right, World War II. To my historians out there, let me ask you, what did Sweden do during World War II? While America was out there kicking butts of Nazis and taking names and freeing countries and liberating people and beating back the Axis forces, what did Sweden do? Sweden maintained neutrality. They did not choose a side. But we will get back to Sweden in just a minute. Anyhow, Frankie was drafted into World War II. While he was gone, music started to change in America. In fact, you have to use the right language or it can be considered racist about what happened to Lindy Hop during World War II. And I will quote Frankie Manning. He said when he returned from World War II, all of the music had changed to bebop. A lot of the ballrooms were closed and even some of them had been destroyed while he was away. They had been taken down. Poor Frankie could no longer make a living with dance and music, so he got a blue-collar job. Frankie Manning seemed like such a sweet, wise old man, and you can even hear him recount some of this story in the podcast. In 1986, a group of individuals reached out to him to teach him Lindy Hop. Frankie Manning did not say this, but NPR felt it worth noting that this group of individuals was white. People started to hear things and talk, and in 1987, Frankie was invited to Sweden to teach classes. Frankie would go back and forth most years for over 20 years to teach these individuals Lindy Hop. The people loved him, they studied, they made lessons, they made videotapes of him, and Frankie Manning's way of Lindy Hop was the way to do it. He was involved in this village of Harang. They loved him so much that when he passed away, they even named a street after him. And in the podcast, you can hear him thanking a group of Swedes saying, thank you for giving me this life. Now let's get back to Sweden as a little bit. Sweden, the libs pushed Sweden as this somewhat socialistic utopia. They did not participate in World War II. They don't have a military. If anything were to happen in the world, Sweden would not fly in and rescue them. So Sweden decides instead of spending money in their military, they have a lot of institutions, one of them being the Sweden Dance Sport Federation. This is what funds this Harang dance camp that teaches Lindy Hop. Anyhow, I apologize, but when you have these government-funded programs, there are certain rules and restrictions that they have to follow the money for the funding. So there are different tiers in this Harang camp. You learn the bottom one, then you move up and up and up, and there's different moves that you have to master before you can move to the next level. That is what happens in these socialistic Marxism institutions. Anyhow, Miss Barnes wants to learn this dance so much that she reaches out to individuals in New York, and NPR has to remind us of...
She contacted some New York-based Lindy Hoppers, they were mostly white, to start learning the steps.
Get used to it, people. This entire story is about race and division instead of different cultures, different races, and unity. Anyhow, like I said before, in 26, she won a scholarship to go to Sweden to learn Lindy Hop. A few minutes into the episode, we meet another individual by the name of Felix Berhall. He is a Swede. He tells a story about how he always felt left out. He never felt like he really clicked with anybody else until he went to a dance class and he fell in love with Lindy Hop. He even recounts a story and he remembers the music that is playing of these two individuals doing this very fast Lindy Hop dance, and they're spinning around in circles and almost communicating with their bodies to one another, that, and if they were to let go of each other, that they both might fall down. And this was his desire, this was his drive, and he wanted to perfect Lindy Hop. So he joined this program as well, and he did very well. He moved all the way up to the ranks and he won competitions as well. Now, you already know where this story is going. We're talking about two very talented dancers from two different cultures, both seeking to learn and master Lindy Hop, and with their powers combined, will be the greatest Lindy Hop dancers of all time. However, Felix has one wrong thing with him: the color of his skin. He is white, and he even recounts this story. I'm going to play it for you here now, where he wishes he could go back to the prime of Lindy Hop in Harlem.
In this conversation, I said that if I would be able to, I would go back to Savoy for one night.
The Savoy Ballroom, where Frankie Manning had made his name.
In my mind, I was like, that would be incredible to see and to hear the music and to see the bands.
This sounded to some of the black attendees like Felix, a white man, was saying he wanted to go back in time to an era of segregation.
Can you believe that? That is not what he said at all. He wants to go back to a prime of Lindy Hop. He is so in love with this dance that he would go back in time to see it in its prime. And instead of taking that as a compliment, he's just a stupid, ignorant white man. Now, if he had the forethought to say, I want to go back in time, and he wanted to be a racist, and he had the forethought to say, I want to go back in time to an era of segregationist, what does that say about the content of his character, knowing that he was white, that he would go back to a time of segregation with a dance, Lindy Hop, that is primarily in the African-American culture? This, you cannot overlook that in this episode. They continually shove it down your throat. What does that say about the content of his character that as a white man, he would go back to a primarily African-American segregated community to participate in this dance? I highly doubt Frankie Manning would have been offended by that comment. But when you are an individual like Miss Barnes and NPR, when you look at the world, all you can see is identity politics. All you can see is people's skin color. And in fact, Miss Barnes does not hold anything back when she talks about her thoughts on white people.
I've been taught for so long not to show up where there's too many white people because it's just going to be such a headache and such a frustration. That's a Southern protective practice. If you see too many white people, go the other way.
She also has this to say about the Swedish program that she got a scholarship to go participate in, that she seeked out, willingly went over there. This is what she has to say about the program itself.
After a while, I think after about 4 days or so, it became a game with the other black attendees, especially the black American attendees. Like, hey, what bullshit are we going to have to scream about today?
I called it cosplaying Jim Crow.
Anyway, about halfway through the episode, she finally talks about the time where she meets Felix. The entire episode has been building up to this moment. And instead of just talking about unity and how these two cultures come together to be great, amazing partners and dance well together, she prejudges him before even knowing his skills in dance. She makes a prejudiced statement and thought about him.
All she could think was,
oh, he's one of the Swedes. Like, oh, he's one of them. Like, oh.
Towards the end of the episode, she does finally have something positive to say about Felix, but just to make sure that we don't offend any vegans.
It was like, sorry for my vegans out there, it was like perfectly prepared tomahawk ribeye with corn on the cob.
Well, I'm glad we didn't offend any vegans. You know, let's just trash on white people the entire time. So division between races. Just point out to individuals that we can't see a difference between skin colors. He's the Swede. It's interesting that she didn't bring up World War II in this episode. She's all about history, talking about segregation. She says that she felt her and other African Americans participating in this program felt the need to educate white people, and they actually felt fatigue from it. She said black dance is political and you can't do the dance without being political. Felix did not want to get involved in politics. He actually said he was the happy Lindy Hopper that wanted to celebrate the dance and not allow history to get in the way of the dance. Felix was actually worried about becoming an activist, being forced to become an activist. He was worried that he would have trouble finding careers after that. And I know what happened. This is not in the episode, but I know what happened. That him and Miss Barnes did so well together that he felt the need to give in to her desires for him to become an activist and to become political. He's Swedish, after all. They remain neutral. So he had a good thing going, and he felt the need to be complacent to keep dancing with her. In fact, she berated him so much about it that he probably finally did give in. She probably wore him down so much that he just gave in. Here she is.
Latasha says that Felix is still one of the best dance partners she's ever danced with. But I had a question about that. He's a white dude from Sweden. Like, did you ever have to get over that in your mind a little bit to talk to him about certain things?
In my mind? No, I didn't have to get over it. I had to berate him about it.
Berate him about what? The color of his skin? She even has the audacity, and this is Felix's reaccounting of the story. She even has the audacity to tell him that he is carrying on a tradition, but that it's not his tradition.
Tasha said this to me. She said, you have to acknowledge that you are carrying on a tradition, but it's not yours.
That this dance that he has devoted his life to, he's like some sort of guest in it because of the color of his skin. I'm so sorry, Miss Barnes, that we cannot make all the accommodations for you. You're gonna have to interact with people who have different skin color. I'm just sorry. I wish you could have learned this earlier, but that's just like how life is. And that is pretty much the gist of this NPR podcast, this episode. So I have a lot of questions after this. My first question would be to Miss Barnes is this program good? Should it not exist? Because even in her own words, if this program did not exist, Lindy Hop might have dissipated entirely, let alone would she learn it and master it. Was Frankie Manning going over to Sweden to teach this dance? Was that a bad thing? I mean, he thanked them for the life that they gave him. Him going back and forth for 20 years. So should that never have happened? Should he have stayed in Harlem and taught that dance to only African Americans? Which would lead me to another question. Miss Barnes, why didn't you master the dance and then return to America, go to Harlem, and start a dance group for only African Americans? Or why don't you pull the top echelon of this Swedish group, bring them back to Harlem, have them teach the dance class, and then when you are happy with the skin color of the individuals in the program, discard them. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Miss Barnes is not a racist and a bigot. Maybe she is just a lady who does not find a lot of joy in life. She seems to have a desire to dance, and every time she gets an opportunity to do it, she finds something to complain and argue about. Now, I can relate to this just a little bit. I have two personal stories. My wife is a dancer, had a minor in dance in college, loved to dance. In fact, when we first got married, we actually paid for her to attend a dance class. We lived near Baltimore City at the time. I never inquired about the diversity within the group, but seeing how we lived close to Baltimore City, I'm sure everybody in the class was not white. My wife loved the class, absolutely loved it, got pure joy just out of participating in the class. She even was involved in dance at our church. We've had two kids since then, so we've had to change our lifestyles a little bit, and she has not participated in dance so much, but for free, she used to participate in dancing at our church, and she just received so much joy from it. And then lastly, my grandfather was a jazz musician in the 40s and 50s. I remember him telling me stories that he loved playing jazz music, and to play with people on his same skill level, he used to go to African American dance halls and clubs and sit with them and play music. He actually opened up a drum shop. He played the drums. He actually opened up a drum shop near DC. And at the time, segregation was still very strong. African Americans would come to his store and buy his drums, and he would allow them. He would know these individuals because he played music with them. So this leads me to another question. My grandfather made a living off of playing jazz. Was he a guest in that culture? Does African American today, who knows very little about jazz music, more a part of that community than my grandfather ever was. A master of the drums, an individual who's able to make a living and provide for a family with this talent. Are you going to tell me he was a guest in that community during a time where it was frowned upon to go to these areas? I'm sure he was not welcomed by everybody or praised by everybody on both sides. And then this leads to my last question. This might offend you a little bit, but it's just a question. When does this acknowledgement and recognition end? Where does it stop? Every time I turn the key of my vehicle, should I acknowledge the Swiss and the Germans who perfected the modern day automobile? Every time I make a phone call or Google something on my phone, do I have to acknowledge Alexander Graham Bell, who invented the first phone? What about when individuals go and vote? Do they have to acknowledge and recognize people who gave them that right to vote? Are they just carrying on a tradition that is not their tradition? I don't believe that at all. But it seems like from this NPR podcast, that is what a good lib would do every time they go vote. It's just a shame that they had this amazing, beautiful story of two people from different parts of the globe, different cultures, who met because of their love for this dance. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. Please let me know what you think. I feel like I asked a lot of good questions here. Please remember to rate, like, comment, and subscribe. Let's get a dialogue going. I am on all the social media platforms now. Facebook, Minds, Tumblr, Twitter, True Social. I am everywhere. Please just search the Chubby Caucasian Christian Closeted Conservative and look for my eagle. I had a family member paint that eagle and I loved it so much that she gave me the original. Now, she loves the Lord. She's very patriotic. So go check out her Redbubble account. Go to Redbubble and search Robin N. Brown. There will also be a link to her account in my description. She has tons of beautiful artwork over there. Just go, please check it out. And we will see you later.